So zebrafish are actually quite common in pet stores. They're a very popular little fish, very robust, striking little guys with yellow and blue stripes. So lots of people have them in their pet stores at home.
And why are they useful to you?
Well, the zebrafish have really emerged as a popular model in biomedicine. So sort of in the same way that a fruit fly or a mouse is a popular model for scientists to work on, over the past couple decades, zebrafish have become really popular. And so some of the reasons for that is that they, compared to a mouse, they're actually quite cheap to maintain. But, of course, it's a vertebrate organism, so compared to a fruit fly, it's really a good representation of mammals and their genes and their brain structures.
Do they replicate fast?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Similar to a fruit fly, they breed really quickly, and it's really easy to breed them. We just set them up the night before in a little breeding cage, and when the lights come on in the morning, they spawn just like a salmon, just laying eggs and fertilizing eggs.
How do zebrafish then fit into your work on prions and prion diseases?
Yeah, so the main purposes are to try to define the normal role of the prion protein in a healthy brain and compare that to what prion protein is doing in a diseased brain. So because zebrafish have a lot of advantages as a model, we're able to really modify the genes easily. So we're able to knock down gene expression or make transgenic fish to increase gene expression. It means that we can alter proteins that we expect to be related to prion protein and interact with prion protein.
How do you actually do that in the fish?
Well, we under a microscope, we use a very fine needle and then inject a small amount of DNA or other chemical into a little recently fertilized egg. And so the egg's on the order of millimeters, so it's fairly workable.
What have you found out so far?
Well, our most exciting result so far is that we found that if we knock down the level of the prion protein, that we see a dramatic phenotype in the fish. The brain seems to fail to develop properly. And that's exciting because in mice, when a similar experiment is done, we don't see a robust or repeatable phenotype. And so this gives us a really interesting tool to now explore what the normal function of prion protein is.
How does that transfer then into, say, other animals like cows, which would have mad cow disease, or into humans?
Well, so our idea is that if we can define the normal role of prion protein and understand the role of proteins that interact with it, that those will be really good targets for developing therapeutics or diagnostic markers.
What stage are you at right now in your projects that you're working on?
Yeah, so the projects are really just under development. We have a couple of different programs in mind that we're really building up the infrastructure and training the students to get started on. The first project is the general goal is to make fish that we can infect with prion disease. In particular, we want to be able to create fish that we can infect with chronic wasting disease. And so this is because, the overall goal is to be able to study chronic wasting disease in an animal setting. So we don't want to study it in a dish of dissociated cells. We want to study it in an intact nervous system. But we want to study it in a system that is easy to maintain. And in this case, we can very quickly alter the gene expression in the zebrafish. So it gives us a lot of tools to understand how chronic wasting disease is progressing and what other proteins are involved in that progression.
Now, you mentioned chronic wasting disease, and there is a fair bit of work going on here at the University of Alberta to look at that. What are the things that you can take from what's been learned already, looking at how CWD is moving amongst deer and elk, and how you can use the zebrafish?
Well, some of the information coming out of chronic wasting disease is in relation to the prion protein gene itself. And so it seems that variations in the sequence that make prion protein do affect the susceptibility of various animals when they're infected with prion disease. And so what that tells us is that if we modify the prion protein in our zebrafish, that we should be able to increase and decrease the amount of prion disease infection that they get. And so with the zebrafish as a very easy way to alter gene expression, that should allow us to define which regions of the prion protein are most important in its normal function and then in disease progression as well.
Well, does that mean that animals would have, some would have a predisposition to succumb to a prion infection?
Yeah, certainly. That's my understanding from the work that's going on around us, that certain animals certainly are more predisposed to it. And in fact, in humans, that's the case as well. The susceptibility certainly can be inherited.
Well, if the susceptibility is inherited, what could possibly be done to stop that? Because it's not like you can change your genes once you're born, can you?
No, certainly. We're not really looking towards any gene therapy type approach like you've implied, but basically what we're using that for is a tool to understand prion protein function. So in a livestock situation, certainly one can envision a breeding program, and I understand that it has been undertaken in sheep in Britain to try to have populations that are enriched for lack of susceptibility to prion disease. But in a wild population, that certainly would be a really challenging undertaking. Yeah.
So would it help you then identify certain populations of, say, deer and elk in the wild that may be more susceptible than others? And then that way you could perhaps track how an infection may or may not spread.
Yeah, certainly that's an area of interest to a lot of our colleagues, Dave Coltman and Evie Morrell and others across Canada are working on those types of problems. Yeah. So one thing we have to keep in mind is that the prion infectivity, the prion disease, doesn't jump between different species, at least not readily. So we call that a species barrier. So to create infectable zebrafish, we need to cross that barrier. So to cross the barrier, we're creating transgenic zebrafish, and those zebrafish will express the prion protein gene that we've taken out of deer or cows, so that we can then hopefully infect those fish with chronic wasting disease, or BSE, mad cow disease.
So what really excites you about this?
Oh, well, I think one of the things that I'm really finding is that by coming at the prion field from a little bit of a tangential angle, that we're asking questions in a slightly different way. And sometimes that's sometimes that helps to refresh a field, not to overstate our contribution so far, but and then for me it's really learning an entirely new field, a very exciting field where we see that it's not DNA that's always pushing the information forward, but it's in fact proteins can code information in an interesting way.
Is this the sort of thing that could be applied to other concerns, not just prions?
Yeah, absolutely. We have other projects underway examining Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is quite similar to prion disease in the way the brain degenerates. Of course, Alzheimer's disease is not infectious, and that's one of the primary differences. But so in the same way that we're making transgenic fish to study prion disease, we're also making transgenic fish expressing human proteins that we hope will replicate Alzheimer's disease. And so there again, we want to understand other proteins that interact with these critical hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease pathology. And we can do that quite easily in zebrafish and hope to understand then how the disease progresses and develop. Eventually that helps us develop targets for diagnosis and amelioration.
Have you actually found anything out yet?
So the critical piece of data that we're building on right now is this observation that when we knock out the prion protein gene, we do see a phenotype in zebrafish. And so this has caused some excitement in the community. It remains to be published. It's preliminary work, but it gives us a really interesting set of tools that people working in other organisms like mouse haven't yet had.
And what's a phenotype?
So a phenotype. So in this case, what we is so a phenotype is a result of any treatment. And so in this case, we notice that when we knock down the gene, the brain seems to fail to develop properly in the zebrafish. So this is different than mice. When the gene is knocked down in mice, the brain develops normally, and one has to search very hard to see any effect. And so that makes studying the protein in mice somewhat limited in that direction.
Do you have any inkling why that would be?
No, that actually remains quite a big mystery. So one of the things we're trying right now is to see if when we put the mouse protein into zebrafish, if that's able to rescue our brain development phenotype and start to pick up some differences between zebrafish and mouse prion protein.
What follows on that then?
Well, so the next steps are then to rescue this phenotype with the mouse prion protein. So putting the mouse prion protein back into zebrafish means that we expect that the brain is going to develop normally again. And from there, that's a really exciting spot to start building some experiments from. We'll then start chopping up that prion protein and see when it fails to rescue brain development. That'll really give us a good sense of which portions of the prion protein, which domains of the protein, are critical for its normal function.
Thank you very much, Ted.
Oh, my pleasure.